Welcome to Conservative Patriot Nation, new members and returning members. Tonight we have a fantastic guest. We have Megan Walsh joining us again, the daughter of John Walsh from America's Most Wanted. Tonight will be another fantastic show. Before we get to the show, I'd like to recognize a couple of our sponsors. I'd like to recognize Mike Lindell and MyPillow. Mike Lindell has been really doing a lot of fighting for the American people. He's been really going out to bat, and there's something that came in the news with his lawyers withdrawing from the case. So if you can go to MyPillow.com, I'm sure Mike and his employees will highly appreciate it. If you go to MyPillow.com and use promo code CPNN, you'll get up to 80% off your purchase. And I tell you, he has employees that are not just conservatives. He has Democrat employees. And those employees, they love freedom. And Mike has really been going to bat. Anyone that's been watching the things that he does, I mean, he's been going to every state. He's been exposing so much evil with our elections. And if you can spare, go to MyPillow.com, give Mike Lindell and his employees some support. It'll be highly appreciative from Mike Lindell and his employees. And last but not least, I'd like to recognize the late, great Dr. Zelenko. We had an honor to have him on here before he passed away. This man went to bat during the pandemic to save a lot of lives. And even though that these evil people try to make it hard on him not to be able to save lives, he continues saving lives because he believed in our only one creator, and that is God. And if you go to zstacklife.com, you'll see all the hidden gems that he left us, and use promo code CPN and you'll get 5% off your order. And last but not least, Megan, thank you for coming out again.
Thanks, Mike. It's great to be back. And as we were talking right before we started this, it was fun to get on the other night and listen, and hopefully I'll be able to do more of that in the future. So thanks for having me back.
Most definitely, Megan. You know, a lot of people, they tend to get distracted with what's going on with current events, politics, fear porn, et cetera, et cetera. One thing I can say is Megan keeps her eyes on God's gems, and God's gems are the children. And a lot of people kind of lose focus on that. And the most important thing is God's children being saved. So, Megan, I know there's a lot of things that you speak on that people aren't aware of. So I'm going to give you the floor. If you want to touch on those things, it's very important that people keep the kids on their awareness.
Thank you, Mike. And that was great. It's actually where I was going to kind of start for tonight. And I thought we would kind of do that, cover a couple of the current things and how that relates to our children and families and how that would relate to us here, as well as, I know a lot of people here do like to talk about Adam's case and different things. So I thought I'd maybe point out a couple things regarding that as well at the end. So, to take off of what you were saying, what you just said, actually, you know, we do have this obvious current crisis going on and conflict between Israel and Hamas, and now, you know, who knows who else, and people are joining by the second or the threat of that being so. So, you know, of course we have these issues. I'll kind of bring it also to what we were talking about the past couple months, the Sound of Freedom movie and the international trafficking, these international humanitarian issues and crises. And then we do kind of, you know, it's great that we care so much about everyone else. And, you know, we think our ways are the best and all of that. We can talk about that a different time, I guess. I'll digress. But we need to be, again, America first. And we do need to be looking at the things that we can actually change and that we can make better for our society. And in turn, you know, if we think that we're that great and we're doing such a great job and other countries should follow us or we should be involved, then we should be setting that precedent here first and foremost. We can't be having things going on here that are against, you know, the best interest of our children, our families, and our culture, and then be, you know, expecting that to be, well received in other parts of the world, I guess would be an easier way to put that, or a general way to put it. But, you know, with these current crises, we see things that we don't like to see and that we think are atrocities, like, you know, the murdering of children, the hostage situations with these children, you know, children being brought back and forth across the border and being trafficked. And, you know, we grab our chests, like you said, we watch the, you know, social media porn, we watch all of this, you know, war stuff on Telegram and on every platform going on. But America kind of brings up that everyday notion that we still kind of don't want to, respectfully, I say this, you know, we don't want to realize. It's kind of, we keep this mentality like, you know, it's not going to happen to us, or it's not happening to us. And we have to also remember, while thinking that we are in America. We're not in a third world country. I mean, that could be argued again today, but, you know, we are in America. It's about social media, influencers, and we have all these things and freedom and all of that. So what, as I've said before, would those issues look like here in America, and specifically pertaining to, you know, what we're seeing with this, you know, these attacks on civilians, on women and children and families that are going on, you know, in other parts of the world. And I think that we're not really realizing that in a different way, it might not look like that. It's not as gruesome as that yet, but that is already happening here in our country, in our own country. And, you know, I will be a broken record until people do address this and realize it, but it is the, you know, DHHS, it is Child Protective Services, DCF, whatever it's called in your area or state. And this is the child trafficking source in our country, American child trafficking. If we don't want to address that, then we're denying victims. We're denying, are we saying that child trafficking doesn't happen in America? Because even people like my father and our three-letter agencies quote how we are the largest consumer of child porn. So we have to be looking at these bigger pictures. You know, when we're seeing things in other areas, we should be learning, we should be observing, we should be questioning how that would apply to us. How can we, you know, implement or discuss even preventative measures? Where are we at as a society with protecting our children? Do our children actually have rights in America? Because they can't speak for themselves. And I know one of the largest rights of children that's come up and is violated is the right to their own biological family. And we have to be noticing, you know, a lot of people through this current conflict are talking about pertaining to the U.S., you know, dual citizenship and with Israel and our politicians and things like that. And we have in these global initiatives, think tanks. And that's, again, where I will bring in the things like the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, or furthermore, the International Center for Missing and Exploited Children. I did put in the chat prior to getting on just a couple of the screenshots of the National Center's page, where you can have a choice through your donations of either being a guardian or protector or an ally to the National Center, is what they call their categories, which I do find interesting myself. And if you look within them, like Celebrite, which is based out of Israel, I believe originally it's a Japanese company, but it is based out of Israel. And also I can post in the chat after on YouTube, you can find my father interviewing one of the heads of Celebrite. They have a sit down talk that's been posted on YouTube about what they do. But my point here is, if you're looking at these participants, they are mostly global initiatives. They're global data. They're global, you know, entertainment, even children's entertainment. We have Pokemon on there. We have TikTok, and all of these platforms that, you know, could like Facebook, which appear to be a pay to play system and setup going on there. And something that I've said for years needs to be investigated and questioned. And we have, just like I said about going to DeSantis and everyone, we've done the work. We've gone and asked for meetings with Florida DCF. We've asked for meetings with the National Center. We've asked to sit down and address these issues that they have control over and almost no oversight, and actually no oversight, no accountability. And to this day, they don't. They will not meet with us. They will not arrange, and they remain silent, which I think we all know what that's an indicator of, unfortunately. So getting back to that, you know, just really, what is that looking like in America? We need to be, you know, we're all talking about, you know, our Second Amendment rights, how protecting our families, and what's going to happen if this war, this conflict elsewhere does progress or does become anything bigger or something that does affect us over here, which it very well could. And how are we protecting our children? How are we protecting our families? Because as we're talking about elections and about all these other issues, like you had said, these international distractions, these issues that are bigger than us that we can't do anything about, while things like my case, the hoax of my case behind closed doors, is you know, passing and creating, setting precedent, as we see with Trump. I mean, I know everyone's now familiar with what setting precedent is and case law and things like that because of his dealings, you know, that are currently going on with the courts. But we have to understand that people like my father, when these issues are happening, that is setting precedent for our children to be able to be removed. And where they are going with this is to use a mental health agenda against us, to use the school system against us. All of the mandated reporters within your community, they will report in 2 seconds for the incentives, but they will not speak up if there's an issue or something going on that's not right. And I've been on here many times before speaking about the corruption that is local to each of us and that we need to be addressing. If there is a war or there are issues going on, what happens when CPS or DCF is saying we need to take children in, we need to protect the children? And when we know that that is not a protective system currently, and these are people that are taking our children for money. The quotas and incentives are bounties on their head. They are trafficked when they're put in the system, and the parents are trafficked as well. The court system is a racket. Even your court-appointed attorney, they all go to lunch at the end of the day, or, you know, on their breaks together. They all know each other at the end of the day outside of your court trial. We just had, and I can put that in the chat as well, I posted on my Twitter, I believe yesterday, another female judge who was caught on her phone texting during a murder trial of a child, and was texting while the mother was, you know, speaking in court, was texting to someone else, I can't remember at the time, but within her system, her court racket, about how the mother's a liar. And, you know, I think we all know here that the courts are a mess at this point. They're not on the American, you know, they're not on the side of American families. They're not on the side of keeping children and families together. And if they were, we would have a system that would be incentivizing, you know, showing thriving families that have never been split up, that went through hardships, and our system and our taxpayer dollars went into them, you know, healing that addiction issue that was affecting them, healing that financial crisis, and getting them further education so they could increase their household income so that they didn't lose their children, providing services like rides to work and back because the family can't afford a car yet. You know, things like this is really what should be incentivized. And it sounds so simple, but that's because it is. As you started, Mike, with this, we have all these bigger conflicts, we have all these distractions, and that's a big ploy. That's to make you feel like you can't do anything about what's going on around you. And that's simply not true, especially when it comes to our children and families. Right now, there are a lot of things even here that we can't do anything about. But protecting our own communities and our children and families is not only something that we can do now, but it's something that we're supposed to learn from all of this. It is about taking, you know, back our power, not in an aggressive way, not in anything, not a fight even, but standing under God for what has been given to us, what our rights are, and the right to protect that. And as we know here, and many that, you know, study the Constitution, become very aware of it, you know, this is our liberty interest, that when our children are being taken through DCF, our right to pursuit of happiness, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness is being violated, and amendments are being violated consistently. I've talked about that in the past, and many people are aware of that, so I won't go into that right now. But the Constitution and the law does not apply within our current American family courts and child protective services. And now we are seeing children over the border being taken into DHHS. And like I said before, for example, in Florida, being sent to Florida, where, you know, the funding is collected now, you know, if you get more kids, you get more funding. And I've discussed also how that is, you know, allowing the trafficking. Why these traffickers are bringing these children to the border is because they know that we already, yes, America, we already have a well-oiled child trafficking system. Adoption is the selling of our children. When our children are taken into custody, or they're taken away fully from one parent under corruption and lack of due process and things, that is kidnapping. That is abduction. And then when you're adopting a child, or when you're giving full custody to a wealthy father or mother, you know, things of that nature, making deals, that's selling children. These are backdoor deals, private adoption, especially. There's no follow up on that. This is paperwork. Children's names can be changed, their ages can be changed. And we have to, as I've again been saying, I'm sorry for anyone that's heard me before and thinks, oh, she's repeating herself or anything, but we have to hammer these simple facts home. I will repeat myself because it's not as complicated as we are trying to make it. I think we're used to that. I think we've been through a lot of big, you know, traumatic situations between COVID striking the globe in a day, and, you know, these conflicts between Ukraine and Russia and Israel and Palestine. You know, all of this is a lot. And I want people to stay grounded in that, because, you know, it does seem overwhelming, you know, especially if you are used to your everyday hard working life as an American citizen. It is a lot to understand and to go through. And then when we see the effects that it is having, with people losing their homes or not being able to buy groceries for their family or afford it, even veterans, you know, homeless on the streets. So it really is time to, you know, look, everyone knows I care about everyone. I want the globe to be peaceful. I want all of our children to be protected and everything. But, you know, when you start with a small business, you have to start small. You have to set a good foundation, you know, things of that nature, for it to be successful on a larger scale. If you want to have an impact and change something, you have to start small. And recognizing that this is our child trafficking system, and it does a lot for a global reach of this, and an international trafficking system. I mean, that's not a small thing to realize. That's a very hard thing to realize. It takes time to sit and wrap your head around what that is. But, you know, inevitably you will have to come to that moment of saying to yourself, what is this? A great example, and I don't get into the debate about it, but, you know, people realizing that abortion is murder. You know, that was a big cognitive switch for people that experienced that, for another example. So I just wanted to, you know, bring up things that we really need to be looking at. I'll move, I guess, into, you know, into the National Center. And I, like I said, I did put in the chat, you know, some of the examples. We see Disney there, we see Celebrite, we see Life Touch there. And then that is obviously the National Center. What went into the International Center is why I'm bringing these up, talking about the current conflict versus America. Yes.
For the new members on here, can you go into just a little bit? You don't have to go into too much detail, but a little bit on how, when you start having your awakening and discovering the truth, and how it all came about with them trying to rip your kids away, and has DeSantis down there in Florida heard your case, and has he done anything to try to, you know, help out?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. For those just joining, my name is Megan Walsh. I'm a national children's rights advocate. I speak out about the corruption within family court and child protective services, that being our domestic child trafficking system here in America. For speaking out about it, and myself as well as others that are in the system and fighting for our children at this time, have been retaliated against severely and domestically terrorized with the taking of our children, the threats to our lives, unlawful arrests, and literally being hunted like the Gestapo with our children here in America, behind you know, this premise, if you will, that that society thinks that this system is for the protection of our children, that this is, you know, creating thriving children, and that we should be adopting. Excuse me?
I think Kelly's mic accidentally unmuted.
Oh, oops, no worries. So that's what I speak about. That's what happened. My father, 2 years ago, in an ambush situation, had, you know, his local racket of the sheriff's department, law enforcement, the Department of Children and Family Services, as well as CC Kids, which is the local business that handles case plans, and the courts removed my three children at the time. We went through a year of the case. They terminated my rights. They granted my parents custody, as well as my oldest biological, the biological father of my oldest daughter, excuse me. And then they came in a rampage with helicopters and battering rams and every resource that you could think of, to then remove a year later my 5-day-old newborn daughter, Esther. And we did the case plan. We went to court. We did everything we could for a year there. And despite doing everything, even multiple times for them, I think it's up to 10 evaluations, substance evaluations, drug bi-weekly random drug testing, you name it, they had it, we did it, and the judge still terminated my rights about 2 weeks ago to my daughter, where my father came in and ambushed the trial and said that my daughter should be adopted to the foster home where she's been for the past year. So my father, John Walsh, the child savior, has my two sons adopted to my mother and him for the adoption fraud. My oldest daughter, with her inheritance, was given to the biological father, and who, you know, they've all perjured themselves. You name it, they've broken every law. This is conspiring for kidnapping and child abduction. Using the system, using their influence, using their power. They took my home. My baby, like I said, will be going to the foster home, will be adopting her. So John Walsh, who says that over 88% of child trafficking comes from the foster care system, yet he does nothing about it, is actually selling his baby granddaughter into the system for the rest of her life, unless America stops this and wakes up and starts talking about it. Because once we start realizing this and people demand that John Walsh and the National Center be looked into and investigated, you know, it really is a part of the house of cards. It does expose a lot of the child trafficking, if not all of it, here in America going on. And, you know, or we can stay silent about it. People can say it's crazy or look the other way. And then we can deal with the, you know, the aftermath or the out, you know, whatever comes from that later that we have to deal with when our children are being taken. They already are being taken for nothing. We have countless parents across this country that have been speaking out on Facebook. You can look up any group on family court corruption or CPS corruption. It's well known in states like Arizona, California. You know, I mean, it's really it's really not debatable anymore, unfortunately. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's not hearsay. It's not, oh, the parents must have done something and we don't know the full story. It's that we have rackets, court rackets, and systemic rackets that are going on within every one of our communities and counties that is taking our children. And the National Center is working hand in hand. We see Amber Alerts. You know, we see the Walmart walls still. If people go to Teachers Against Trafficking on Twitter, they have an account where Yeshua and his father, Othello, you know, have a whole situation. They've opened a federal case against my father, along with others like Obama and Kamala Harris. And no one is looking at these. You know, people aren't joking when they open federal cases. I opened a federal RICO case last year against my father and everyone involved in the taking of my children. And I actually didn't know it was on the same day and in the same courthouse in Florida that Trump filed his RICO filing last year. So that was interesting. But anyways, you know, I just think that, again, like I keep saying, we need to realize this. We have to focus on what we can do here in America, what is affecting us the most. And, you know, when we have this issue with our, I mean, the amount of resources and our taxpayer dollars that are going into the taking of our children, trafficking them, the courts are making the money off it, the lawyers, the administration, everything, when all of that should be going into the families that can't buy groceries right now, the families that are struggling because they're stressed out and, you know, they can't get their kids to school on time, or, you know, there's just so many nuances to families and children that a system will never be able to handle it. We should have never had this enter into a system, especially one that's set up in a court nature, when these are not court proceedings. These are kangaroo courts. This is civil. You know, my children and my rights were terminated for my life and for their life. My children's rights to their biological mother were terminated for the rest of their life until they're 18, or if they, you know, want to look out, of course, there's that option. But technically speaking, for the rest of their lives, based on no crimes committed. This cannot be happening, and people need to understand the severe danger and vulnerability to each of our families and children that this creates, especially when we have more mandated reporters within schools, within doctors' offices. You know, that I'm going to keep from going down a rabbit hole there, but that's where we start talking about Obamacare. We start talking about Title IV funding. We start talking about ASFA and, you know, the Adam Walsh Act and all of these things that were implemented when maybe we weren't paying attention. Just like we've seen with the schools, and a lot of us are realizing that we were sending our kids off and the teachers were raising our children, or, you know, they were indoctrinating them into things that we didn't approve of, maybe. So I just, you know, I want to get on and talk about that. And like I've always said, I brought up the things with the National Center. I put a couple of things there for people to dig into if they want to, or look into that. Life Touch, which is there. They actually, I was called by a mother who their school was sending automatically the school pictures of your children to this company, Life Touch, where it's automatically uploaded to a database. And one of my mom friends from Facebook and around the country, they were contacting me just livid, saying, you know, I never gave permission or consent, never even knew that my children's school picture was being uploaded, you know, to a database, and especially with this company. And then I've got great friends, so they would call the company and you know, they called the National Center, and the National Center said, you need to take that up with Life Touch. Life Touch calls, or they call Life Touch, and Life Touch says, oh, we've never had that issue before. We'll have to talk to the National Center and we'll get back to you. And that's exactly what happens within CPS too. It's this pass the buck system. There's no accountability. There's no transparency, and there's no oversight. So, you know, that's an issue there. And maybe people would like to look into that, especially parents listening, whether your school uses Life Touch or not, and whether that resonates with you and having your child's information in a database. You know, these organizations that we're seeing, you know, are more of a, as the National Center calls itself, a clearinghouse where they're collecting more data. How effective are these, you know, organizations, these NGOs that are getting, you know, the National Center, for example, gets $40 million at least a year in federal funding, and they receive around $20 million a year in private donor funding, which I'll remind people again, one of those donors is L Brands, which is actually Les Wexner. And then there's other nefarious players in there as well, but that's not what we're talking about tonight. So, but again, you know, just looking at these different aspects of the system that we've allowed, looking at these NGOs and how they are going out globally, you know, how these initiatives, they, you know, call them initiatives, global initiatives on data, collecting this data on our children, knowing where our children are, what their blood types are, what, you know, our family background is. And that's what we're seeing within CPS, just like we saw with, say, January 6ers. Or any of the militia type situations like Whitmer and things like that, where they are literally taking people's lifestyles and then targeting them and weaponizing it. So if you're speaking out against, you know, CPS, for example, like I was, you know, they took the fact that I was homeschooling my children during a pandemic and used that against me. They took the fact that I was a Christian and twisted that and demonized that. They took the fact that my children didn't eat GMOs or processed foods and said that I had very strict and bizarre, you know, diets for dietary, you know, requirements for my children. You know, they said, I mean, just the most subjective, unproven hearsay things, but that were targeted. Oh, that I was anti-vax, that I was completely anti-vax, despite my daughter having her vaccines for school and things when she needed it in the past. But I was suddenly completely anti-vax psycho because I didn't want my children to have an experimental shot at the time. And still to this day. So, you know, those, all of those things, and those were just the current examples were used and demonized. You know, I was put into this extremist, type, you know, narrative that was created on the court papers, that were not at all, you know, what the reality of who I am, who my children are, what my family was. We were a beautiful, beautiful family. My children are so loving. They were so bonded. They didn't know what abuse was. And, you know, that's another issue that's going on is these domestic violence issues, and situations where, you know, women are trying to get away from their abusers. They are trying to leave with their children or get safe, and they're trying to implement things. And we know if we actually are learned in it and take this in a sophisticated way that we should be treating these issues. You know, we know that when a woman leaves with children or leaves an abuser, whichever sex it is, that that is one of the most dangerous times for that victim or for that person leaving that situation. And when we have a system where that was the case for myself, I was leaving, you know, the abuse of my parents, the threats and harassment from my parents, I was leaving that with my children. And instead, the system was allowed to be used against me to be taken, to take my children and hand them to our abusers, where I was told that I was manipulating people. I was, you know, blaming, and when I would advocate for my children, it was blaming others. You know, it's just a wild ride how this system manipulates and twists, and no one would know it unless you are involved in it, unless you are put through it. You are literally trafficked, and your children are trafficked. When a child is picked up by a worker at one place and taken to another place, and they collect a salary on that, and they're transporting a child, that is trafficking, especially if it is against the will and consent of the parents. So I know we've got a lot of people on here that know about constitutional law and, you know, just, you know, us as our sovereign rights here and what should be, but we really need to be looking at that as well. Let's see. I think I wrote a couple notes. I was really getting on just to kind of see what you guys were looking at, you know, currently and how that pertained to, you know, these issues, you know, that again, guys, we can do something about this here. You can court watch in your community. You can email your politicians and your representatives and say, are you aware of this, you know, of systemic child trafficking within our state, within our county? And if you are aware, what are you doing about it? If you're saying you're not aware of it, then are you open to us coming in and or being sent more information regarding this? And being open to working with the community on how to prevent this and how to ensure that it's not happening within our county or our state. We can use our voice. You know, we can use our voice about the bigger conflicts and different things that are going on, but we have to act here in the U.S. to protect ourselves. We're talking about it with guns. We're talking about it with elections. We're talking about it with vaccines. We're talking about it in every single other area except for the child trafficking that's going on. And the families that are being hunted, literally like the Gestapo down in the neighborhoods. We've released so many videos of different CPS workers aided by the police, you know, taking children and threatening parents. You know, this is terror and trauma. This is a disgusting, vile system. The foster homes, the collecting. My daughter's in a foster home right now that she is one of five in an apartment in a not great area of town. And so, you know, we really, I don't mean to be redundant or whatnot, but, you know, we care so much about everything else. And, you know, it's really insane the low standards and levels that we just don't even acknowledge, never mind just accept, but don't even care about, don't even want to talk about over our children. You know, these systems should be having, if we have any system at all, or we have intervention by a government into our families, they should be, I mean, where are the child psychologists? Where are trauma experts? Where are, you know, family mediators or, you know, Christian counselors or religion, you know, spiritual advisors, if you're not a Christian, you know, things like this is what should be community, you know, after school programs for children. You know, this is where our focus should be. And it's not saying that we don't have some of that implemented already. But again, that main focus on, you know, currently, you don't even have to have, I think you have to have a GED to be a social worker, you know, in these different businesses that the state is hiring. It's not even our government covering these cases, having oversight. These are private businesses that perjure themselves. They lie. They hinder case plans. They have children sleeping in conference rooms. They're placing children with ex-convicts at this point. I mean, I don't know. And maybe, you know, when we break after this, I'll wrap this up, but maybe people can contribute. And that's what we've been asking for years. But, you know, how do we get this through that this is the reality of where we are? This is how our children are being treated. This is child trafficking. This is having people, parents and children alike, are committing suicide. This is a lot of the reason why we see the mental turmoil and the societal turmoil that is going on currently. You know, a child is always going to want to know where they came from. It's like, you know, each human, no matter what you believe in religiously, you have some sort of, even if you're an atheist, you've thought about where you come from or what's bigger than you, what created you. So, you know, children always want that. And we are literally in such an inverted system. We are going into homes with a government personnel saying, state actors saying that they are here for your best interest. We're here to protect you. We're scooping you out of your primary environment, which we know statistically, even with any substance abuse, any domestic violence, anything, even if that is present, it's still the best place statistically for children to be is in their primary and specifically biological families and environments. And we are having these people come in, take them out of their homes and say, oh, this is for your protection, then placing them in strangers' homes or foster homes or with an abusive grandmother that made these reports to get the child. Or different things like that are happening. And then we're having them go to services. We're saying now we're diagnosing you with things. We just traumatized children and a family. Then we're going to say that we are diagnosing them with things. Then they're going to take our big pharma contracted medications through our big pharma contracted behavioral health centers and doctors. And then we're going to have them do these drug tests that we're going to collect money on. The kids are going to go to these different things. We're going to get funding for this child because we found that he has special needs because we know we get more money for that. Also, that checked off one for our quota in that area. We have to get this many kids of this demographic. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And it is nothing but a money scheme that is creating a problem, then offering the solution and blaming the victims. So we have a very twisted Hegelian dialect. It is very sick going on, and it is up to us to correct this and to speak up about it. And I don't know what else that is going on currently that we could actually do more about at this time and that we need to do more about for our future. So I guess I'll leave it with that and kind of, you know, Mike, and if you guys want to open it up for questions or we just want to have a conversation or that's it. I think we kind of covered a lot of information, and I'm always here if, you know, people want to help or get involved, if they have questions, if you want to help research, anything like that. And thanks.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing all the information. And, you know, for everything that Megan said, there's a story going down in Florida right now, actually, with, and you can go, if you got Netflix, you can check it out. It's called Taking Care of Maya. And you can watch those court hearings on YouTube. It caused her mother to kill herself because she thought if she kills herself, then maybe they'll get their kid back. And the bad thing about it, she killed herself and the father got Maya back. So that'll definitely give you a glimpse of what Megan's talking about. And Megan, if you want to touch a little bit on that and the Amber Alert system, because my mind was blown when I found out that Feinstein was part of that with the lady that got caught in Haiti and then got a name changed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what we're, you know, for, well, the Amber Alert, yes, you know, I highly encourage everyone to please, if you're going to go watch everything, I know everyone rallied for Sound of Freedom. I know everyone watched this. Please go and watch Maya's case and please go watch this documentary. It's absolutely amazing. You will see more and more of what happens. She, again, is only one example of countless. That's the thing as well, is when I started getting into advocacy and speaking out about this issue and this child trafficking, you know, before my children were ever taken, any of that, you know, I would be in groups with people and I'd be listening to everyone's testimonies. And you guys have to understand that every single case is horrific. Every single situation is more horrific than the next on what the system has done to these families, the way that they have lied and just ripped, you know, families apart while destroying them, locking them up, you know, having them commit suicide, things of that nature. That's what my parents are hoping will happen with me. They know that my children are my entire life and my world. And that's a big thing that we're seeing with elites as well. We're seeing elites and grandparents, you know, using this for supplements for their retirement or for retaliation for family secrets, or just, you know, for your child to be raised in their lifestyle. It's like leaving a cult. I mean, I literally feel like I left a cult and I'm being shunned and my children are kept in the cult and being brainwashed, you know, that mommy's sick and I'm basically being erased with cake and candy and cookies and new families and mansions and all of that, that I didn't want my children to have. I wanted my children to have a normal life. So anyways, I guess that would lead me into the Amber Alert, the systemic issues there. And you're absolutely right. Feinstein, I mean, Pelosi, McConnell, they're all involved in this. Haiti, I'll remind everyone what Mike was talking about. That's referring to Laura Silsby, who later became Laura Gaylord, that then headed Alert Sense, which handles Amber Alerts. And that is connected to the Podestas and the hotline, the Clinton hotline, and all of that, the Clinton Foundation, excuse me. So with that, we did see Laura Silsby, you know, social worker type, NGO type, going down to Haiti during a crisis. We've got these NGOs, and she is caught trying to cross the border with Haitian children who she was claiming were orphans, and that she was taking them to be saved from the disaster, when in fact it was found that they were not actually the orphans at all. They had families that were looking for them and wanted them. You know, I'll skip for a second on a side note. The similar situation also people might know about is with Madonna and Malawi, the Malawi children that she took in and adopted. There was supposedly the original agreement was that she would take the children when they were young and to give them a good education, things, and that she would be bringing them back to see the family, and that the family would have relationship, and she could, you know, they could have her back later, the children back later, and that never was followed through. So, but back to Amber Alert. Sorry, I just wanted to show people that it is a little more than just this situation that it happens. But with you know, Clinton went down, Hillary went down to Haiti, cleared Laura Silsby, got her out of that mess. I believe she spent, what was it, Mike, 6 months, I believe, in jail or something like that, and was released. Then went into to Alert Sense with Amber Alert. And now Amber Alert, what we're seeing is really a great way to keep your product. If your product escapes, Amber Alert's a great way to either retaliate against families or parents, adults that might be, a parent might be involved in an agency or some kind of government thing, or a local situation, and that doesn't work out for a union, or it doesn't work out for a local, and then they're retaliated against using their children. You know, we have different situations like that going on, but with Amber Alert, mostly what we're seeing is these are, how many Amber Alerts have actually been looked into as to how many of the children were in the system, or how many of those families were involved, had CPS involved in their lives? Because now we've seen, even with the company that was handling my case plan, while I was at a visit, they had an Amber Alert go out. And, you know, my transporter said, wow, that's the kid that I dropped off last night. And I couldn't believe it. I end up finding out that I know who these people are. I grew up with the parents, and the father actually ended up going and picking up his son from his mother's house, because they were afraid that the grandmother who he was placed with, was going to be taking him across, to Canada, and that she would disappear with him. And they had CPS already involved, and that's why the child was placed with the grandmother to begin with. And the child kept saying, he's 13, and he kept saying, you know, I'm going to run away. I'm going to run, blah, blah, blah. So the parents were freaked out. The father goes, he's a state national. He goes and picks up his son. They put out an Amber Alert. That was a Friday night. They find him and his son at his house. I mean, they weren't on the run. They didn't go anything. They were just sick of the system that is screwing us. They make false records. You keep doing everything they say, and they keep moving the goalposts. They delay things. They run out the clock so that they can go to you. Oh, look, you didn't do what you're supposed to do. Oops, now we have to take your child. And so I think a lot of parents are sick of that, and they can't see their child go through what they're put through. And either the child runs away, which the National Center and the system love to blame runaways, but children aren't running away from a great new environment that you gave them and a new home, and because they're so happy either, by the way. And parents are going and getting their children because they have no hope. There's no help for us. There's no support. There's no one standing up and saying this is wrong. And if anyone does, then they're threatening themselves. We've had, even on my case, you know, we had multiple workers fired or quit because of the threats and the bullying and the gossip and, you know, the way that these cases are being handled. Parents are being demonized in courts, and all of these people are, you know, people making these decisions that have never had hands-on experience with the families. So Amber Alert, we're seeing with that is kind of if a parent picks up its child, if a child runs away, you know, that's one example of a way that we're seeing it being used. You know, for instance, he was picked up. They got the child. Sorry to skip around there on that one. They got the child, and the next day he was released from jail by noon the next day. So we're not seeing follow up on Amber Alerts. People don't really look and see how many are recovered. Usually they're canceled after about an hour or so, or the child's found safely. But then that sets a statistic, right? So you're setting a number when you're putting the Amber Alert out. But then, you know, the media sees all of that, but doesn't necessarily see the follow up to it, which creates the statistic, which then gives them the funding the following year, and might not exactly be as effective as claims to be, or might not be for the purpose that it claims it is. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And thank you for covering all that, because a lot of people don't understand, you know, the system of operations, and it's just great to have someone to explain that, to clarify what's really going on.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I mean, it's not easy. We're all looking at the stuff that's in our face. You know, obviously it's we've got social media. It's hard to deny, right? I'm one of them. But we have to, as we saw with Epstein and everything, you know, it boggles my mind, because everyone always wants to know about Epstein. What's the list? Why isn't there justice? All of it. But that's because it is all out already. You know, I mean, we're the ones that have to implement, you know, it wasn't just Epstein doing this. Who are the people behind, you know, those curtains? Who are the puppet masters? Who were the people that, you know, we care about the Epstein list on his plane, but plenty of people have private jets that they use. Who are those people? You know, there's so many other questions to ask, and we acted like we wanted to know all of that. But then when it gets down to the nitty gritty of it, that it's not so glamorous. It's not this, you know, I'm not saying it's not involved, but it's not this big narrative of adrenochrome and tunnels and da 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 da. Maybe it starts right in front of our faces in our own communities with our child trafficking system, and that being the source for things like that to then happen or be able to. We have to be, I'm all about identifying an issue, coming up with a solution, and acting on it. And when the National Center for Missing Exploited Children and John Walsh and the FBI want to put out stating that over 88 to 92% of child trafficking comes from the foster care system, yet they do nothing about it, that's an issue for me. And that's something that I'm not going to stop questioning, because that is 88 to 92%, and that's only reported. That's almost 100, guys. So as I've said before, I'm not great at math, but if we address the system and abolish it, because it is destroying our families and children to even death and worse, you know, we need to be addressing that. We can do something about that. That is almost 100% of that source being cut. So, you know, I mean, maybe that's, you know, just some insight into, you know, I just want people to realize that we actually can do something about this. It's just, we have to be able to talk about it and look at it in this perspective. And then it does make sense. And then it is, you know, easy to, not easy in any way, but we can bite that off. We can chew on that. We can do something about it. We can make demands in our communities. We can be aware of who the social workers are in our communities. We can be aware of who the judges are and who the GALs are and the different people that are doing this, you know, while we try to stop it. You know, there's things that we can do in the meantime of fixing an overall issue as well.
Absolutely. Thank you, Megan. It's always an honor to come on, have you on here. And thank you for sparing time to come on here. And if you're ready for questions, we definitely can go into Q&A.
Yeah, for sure. Before we do that real quick, I forgot to point that out. Also, people might be wondering in the chat. I also included Victor Haldersblatt. He is one of those behind the scenes that, you know, I want people to start kind of paying attention to those people. He is on the board of the International Center for Missing and Exploited Children. He is also, if you read his wiki and if you look into some articles about him, he is a huge puppet master behind the World Economic Forum, Davos, and every other, you know, elite think tank group, social circle. He's one of those that makes the deals behind the scenes that, you know, no one really knows his name. And here we have him with the International Center for Missing and Exploited Children. So, I guess I could bring it full circle to the, you know, Israeli Hamas, these international conflicts that we are having, where we are seeing them targeting civilians and, you know, that being families, children, mothers, all of that. And, you know, reminding people that not only do we have the National Center for Missing Exploited Children, but we have the International Center for Missing Exploited Children, which does have the likes of Richard Branson, Hillary Clinton, Tony Blair, World Economic Forum. And then again, this another player behind the scenes is Ernie Allen, that people will really see is at the root of all of these organizations, including Thorne, with Ashton Kutcher. So that I did include just his screenshot and the first little blurb of his bio, so people could see who he was and look into it if they'd like.
And one thing I just remembered, you wanted to close with Adam. And I know there's a lot of people that asked about Adam. If you could just touch on that and we can go right into questions.
Oh yeah. Well, I guess, I mean, even going off of Amber Alerts, we were talking about, you know, and the Walmart walls, I guess I could remind people, you know, we used to have the milk cartons and we have the hotlines, right? That we're finding out all funnel to the same place and who they're funneled through and that kind of thing. But I also wanted to remind people of the catalogs and Sears being specifically one of them with potential ways of trafficking. To relate to the Amber Alert. But in general about Adam, I guess I just wanted to maybe give people that do, you know, like that kind of stuff or interested in that side of my story. You know, we have had some new developments. I have some reporters actually looking into the case files, some investigative reporters. I'm very excited about that. We do, you know, we have to remember that there has also been a complete media blackout on my situation and case. I mean, even down to John Walsh had to, you know, rescue his grandchildren from his crazy daughter. Where was that headline, guys? But so I would welcome it gladly because then I could respond and face my accusers. But anyways, I digress. With Adam, you know, what we really noticed was, and I know some of your people, Mike, you know, are interested in this and talk about it. And I brought up Humble, maybe had some information or insight on it. But what we're seeing is, you know, I kept saying for 2 years with these allegations against me that I really couldn't wait to find out, you know, who wrote this script, these affidavits and these allegations. And I kept stating it. And it was just very bizarre. And I've said it over the years, but it's kind of all clicking as we find more and more about my parents' background and we put more and more together. The allegations against me were very similar to, you know, and very reminiscent. It was like I was reading these allegations and I was like, you know, this is not me. This is a literal straw man on paper of me. And who is this? Like, whose allegations are these? And when I started putting it together and then researching more about my parents and the home environment of Adam and the situation that was going on before Adam's disappearance, as I've always told people, you know, that's really what got me looking into it was after experiencing my upbringing and my parents' abuse and the way my mom was with us and my parents' relationship and the infidelity and the substance abuse and the mental and verbal abuse, all of that. even physical, you know, it really made me start to question, you know, who were John and Revae Walsh before? Like, you know, America was given this narrative of these perfect parents and, you know, he was a hotel guy and they're well off and, you know, their son just goes missing. And, you know, this whole, you know, chest grabbing, you know, victim narrative. And I was like, well, I know my parents and I know what was going on. And at the time, and you know, what did that play more into Adam's disappearance, I guess, is really what I'm trying to get at here. And I knew about my mom's younger lover, significantly younger lover, James Campbell, who again was living in the home, significantly younger than her, and actually who had come forward. And I will be releasing those. They are up. I've told everyone they can go to justiceforadam.com. Again, that's justiceforadam.com. I believe it's box 2, but don't mark me on that. But you can find the polygraph tests of my father, the affidavits from all witnesses, my mother and everyone, but specifically James Campbell. And I was really trying to find those and dig for them. And I was able to do that to reveal what their lifestyle was like, when Adam, you know, before and leading up to Adam's disappearance. And, my parents did try to sue Sears, actually after Adam's disappearance for negligence, ironically. And, you know, Sears was able to prove, you know, certain things that my parents have continued saying, things like, oh, I only left him for 10 minutes, when Sears was able to prove that it was over 90 minutes that my brother was left alone. But most of all, that James Campbell's affidavit was to be, put into the case, right, into the court proceedings. And my parents filed a motion for that to be omitted, for it not to be allowed in the case. And the judge decided adamantly that it would be allowed in the case, because it was huge evidence and accounts of, what Adam, the child's home life and lifestyle was like, you know, leading up to his disappearance, him disappearing, which then in turn, my parents decided to, you know, conveniently drop the Sears case. And a couple years later, you know, went on after lobbying on Capitol Hill for legislation, establishing the National Center in 84 under Reagan. And which actually the National Center was founded by Congress. That's a big thing when we're talking about foreign entities or dual citizenships. The National Center was actually formed by Congress, and it is listed as a nonprofit of the District of Columbia. And Mike, you know well, and we've brought it up before about Kathy O'Brien, that was involving Senator Byrd. You know, she can also attest that he was kind of named to be in charge of creating the National Center as the child trafficking front. And of course, those were around the times, I'm getting way off topic, but you know, those were around the times of you know, the Franklin scandal, McMartin, and most specifically the Finders cult. So I'll bring it back to what I was talking about with the allegations, since I've just said the Finders cult. What I started looking at were these allegations in comparison to my allegations in comparison to James Campbell's take and the facts that we know about Adam and my family leading up to his disappearance. And then it led me to start comparatively looking at what we know about the Finders cult and their techniques, their approach, how they were raising the kids, how they were weaning the children from their mothers. They were choosing, you know, brilliant, quote unquote, brilliant children. Things like that. And I have started, I'll be releasing it. You know, I don't want to give a time frame because I'm not sure when it'll be done, but I am doing a comparative, you know, type report that I'll be releasing with those three. And I think I'll be adding our current CPS system just so people can see how this was really set up. You know, going from Dr. Kinsey, Margaret Sanger, Hillary Clinton, you know, the Finders, the CIA, National Center with Congress, and how that kind of plays out better for people. So I guess that was kind of a something I wanted to bring up. people, again, can look at justiceforadam.com. Humble, I was talking about or bringing up in terms of the fact also, Mike, of, you know, how we hear sometimes that cases happen or crimes happen, that the evidence or, you know, the facts of the case can be buried or put into other cases and other people are actually blamed for it, or that's a way to get rid of evidence or different variables about that. So I think that's what I was kind of reaching out to see if any of your peeps had, you know, more insight on that to look at my case more specifically, or Adam's case, but we can talk about that at a different time.
Most definitely. If you're ready to go into Q&A, we definitely can go into Q&A now. And thank you for everything that you shared, Megan.
Yeah, no worries. Sorry it's Saturday, guys. I'm kind of just talking off the cuff today, but thank you.
No, you're good. And Kelly will be doing questions tonight.
Woohoo!
Yay! If you guys have a question, ladies and gentlemen, press the blue button and it'll raise your hand and I'll call on you. So I don't want to keep talking about Adam, but I'll ask you this because that's not the prime focus of having you on. I mean, it is important, but I always ask you this. Have you talked to the one that, quote, unquote, says he's Adam? Has he reached out recently to you?
Well, it's interesting, and I'm not going to say a bunch right now, but I had given the contact, you know, I've told you guys before that I had him hidden in a nursing home for the past 2 years. He's been being taken care of. He's in a place no one really, you know, it's not a big place where people would think he would be, or a big city, anything like that. So I had him safely there. You know, it's wild. He went off of his social media and everything. So I only had the name of the nursing home. And I have to tell you guys, I admit it's been so much in the 2 years. I cannot remember the name. I had it written in my phone and all of that. I gave a reporter or an advocate, I should say, not a reporter, an advocate, which people need to be careful because there's a lot of infiltrators in all of these groups, his contact information, and she is kind of gatekept, if you will. I've asked multiple times for her to give me the name of the nursing home. I feel like, you know, the approach that she used was very exploitive with him. I only gave the information because she was going to, you know, kind of interview him and see, you know, how we could release the information. You know, I have a lot of information that I haven't talked about regarding him and his take on things. And, you know, but it's also because I'm still navigating that. They also called me crazy so that I couldn't talk about all this stuff. So, you know, I'm dealing with that, but I don't mean to not answer. It's funny that you bring it up because literally this past week, Kelly, I've been trying to get back in touch with him. Again, the investigative journalist that is heavily looking into the case and the situation is requesting to speak with him. So hopefully if everyone can pray, we'll get that back on track. But I know he is ready to. You know, that's been the thing. His story has not changed. It's a very wild story, but it has not changed. And he is more than happy to speak with my parents, to give DNA, to, you know, to do what is necessary. So I'm kind of living in, you know, the moment in regards to that, to the whole situation regarding Adam, Lily. But hopefully the truth will come out soon.
So do you get, no one's raising their hand, so you know I'll ask you questions. Do you get updated reports, or is it a closed case on your children? Like, it's so sad. Like, I tell people about your story all the time, you know, here and there, and it's abnormal situation. And yeah, do you have contact at all, like, from anybody?
No, I don't actually. And my dad started getting involved in the second case for my baby, about a month before my trial. He started contacting the foster mother behind my back. He started contacting the baby's father. He has literally witnessed tampered. He has threatened or incentivized everyone involved. And then all of a sudden it was that, you know, the foster mother isn't talking to me after an entire year of us going back and forth, having a great relationship. And he shows up literally in the court behind closed doors and, you know, advocates for this woman to be given my child. And I literally watched my dad sell a baby in a backdoor deal in the courts, surrounded by all of the racket, and that baby was mine. And I haven't been able to, the judge signed the termination of rights on a Saturday night at 6 p.m. And, yep. And then we found her, YouTube video, actually, Victoria Griffin. We found her YouTube video of her public, her being publicly reprimanded by the Supreme Court of Florida for election campaign fraud. So this woman that just took my child for life, is more of a criminal and fraud than I am. And that's what's happening in these courts. So I have had no contact. I have not been able, my children have not been able to, my older three have not been able to see or speak to their mother in over a year. While again, my parents keep them, you know, on their mansion with cake and cookie and candy. I mean, they're grooming. This is grooming. And we talk about the reunification camps and children being taken from their parents and put with the abuser for 90 days and basically reprogrammed that, you know, the abuse never happened and that what's happening to them is what's right. And it's literally what my parents have done, you know, in a private way, not sending them to a camp, but doing it with nannies, you know, again, pool parties and new families and, you know, all of this to erase me. And it's really vile, especially to watch, you know, I know my parents, I know how abusive and aggressive and scary they are. But to watch the, you know, law enforcement and CPS and all these people who are taking an oath to protect us, you know, to absolutely look at us and blame and gaslight and further abuse my children and I, you know, I feel more abused by the system than I did by my parents almost at this point. So, and again, I'm speaking this because this is happening to so many other people that can't speak about it or don't have the platform that I do to share their experience and their horror and their daily heartache. I mean, this is broken hearts. I go to sleep every night and I wake up every morning already crying, thinking about my children in their bed, you know, wondering when is mommy, you know, coming or, you know, and then I think about all the children in foster homes and I think about children in homes with convicts or, you know, pedophiles and maybe not even in homes, you know, it's just really rough and it's hard for me and a lot of us to understand, to, you know, to understand why this is still being ignored, why the American people who say every day they get up and tweet, they talk about, you know, children are what matters, families, children, America, but it seems like, and it's in reality right now, it is the last thing on people's minds or priorities. And I don't say that, you know, I'm not happy to say that, you know, it's wild.
Yeah. Your parents have a lot of like, unfortunately, pull and control. What's crazy is with my job, I see kids, not that I want them in the system after hearing your stories and others, but man, some of these parents, they're like, on meth and crazy stuff, you know, like
absolutely, yeah,
and they shouldn't absolutely have their kids necessarily. Not saying the CPS is the, and then we see your story, and it's just even like 2 years later, or how long you've been on our show, it just blows my mind that someone like the way you speak and everything, how your children could be just taken away, it's just mind blowing.
Well, ask DeSantis that, ask Ashley Moody. I mean, really, if people called, if people wrote on their stuff, you know, I mean, these are our officials. He's the one that oversaw all of that. And, you know, ultimately, that's the point, is that we need to be asking these questions. And why is this happening? Because it's not just me. And yes, to address what you said, you know, I always try to preface with that, actually, like, there are real issues of like abuse and neglect and crimes against children. And granted, you know, it in itself needs a lot of reform, but we do have a criminal justice system. You know, if someone is torturing their child, they should be behind bars. Don't we all agree on that? Like, You know what I'm saying? And but then also things like the drug issue does come in. Yes, there are parents on meth. And like I said, there are nuances. That's why a system cannot handle these situations, because there are nuances to everyone's situation. You know, a system can only look at product, at, you know, input and output. It looks at in check marks and things of this nature, right? Not nuances of someone's life or family or situations. But, you know, we have a huge issue of fentanyl. We have a huge drug issue that's going on in this country. And, you know, it's not to say that people on drugs are not to, you know, be held responsible. Absolutely. But when we have something that is an overall issue that's coming across our borders, you know, things like fentanyl that are being put in other things where people don't even know that they're taking it. And again, that's not to get in that discussion or debate about it. But my point here is that it depends on what the situation is, right? We have a criminal justice system for if a child's being beaten to death or put in a cage or starved or any of these serious real crimes against children. But what we have now that we've allowed to develop is this civil racket system of family court and dependency court, where now that is not the case. You don't have these cases, you know, that are meth heads and da-da. You have working class families. You have, you know, people that do care about their children, love their children, are having them taken for the money and the incentive, because it's a beast that feeds itself. We talk about a beast system, but this is literally that. It is something that is based on funding and statistics, and you need to have the higher statistics to get the higher funding and whatnot. And it's completely administrative. It's corrupt, and that's what's ruining us. But you know, we have to be able to differentiate between that, Kelly, you know, because yes, that's a reality that we have issues, but how are we handling those issues? What are those issues stemming from? I mean, even the children acting out now, I posted last week a video of children, you know, I believe it was in Baltimore or something, beating up a social worker. And people were like, started to call them, you know, on the comments, started to call the children like animals. And, oh, these aren't kids. These are animals and they deserve this and that. And blah, blah. It's like, okay, I get that that's the easy response. I get that that's where, as a society, that vicious. But like, no, these are children. And first of all, kids are goats. So you are equating them and you've been indoctrinated through the system and you're taking the bait of calling children kids, which are goats, which subconsciously get you to treat them like an animal, which also President Reagan in his adoption initiative actually put that in the context of children as animals with his rehoming initiative, and the fact that if an adoption didn't work out, it's the child's fault, and you can bring them back and exchange them for another one. And we're still doing that today. I mean, we're still doing that today. Foster homes are having runway shows. You can look it up on YouTube. This is not hidden. I don't understand why people are okay with this, or just go, oh, or whatever, you know, bodily response that they do to ignore this or to deny this. We have foster homes that are doing runway shows with teenagers and kids, where the kids are walking up and down with a room of prospects to adopt them. They've got a couple minutes to, you know, hope that someone likes what they see and adopts them. Oh, wow. And then when it doesn't work out, they return the children. I mean, this, you guys, it's literally selling and trading of our children. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and our CPS system currently does appear and have very similar approaches. And it could be a larger, you know, manifestation of what the Finders cult was doing, which is CIA. The Finders cult was taking children and making a network on the computer that was found in the van. They had high-tech computer capabilities that civilians and everyday people did not have at that time when the van was found with the children. And they were taking children and they were trading them and they were raising them in a natural environment. They were weaning the children from the mothers. I mean, it was a whole ideology. And, you know, that brings me back to what we're seeing with Adam and my parents. You know, we've got this like MAPS notion that I've been exposing for years, the minor attracted persons. And, you know, we've been seeing, I posted about 2 weeks ago, a YouTube clip of, you know, these predator channels that, you know, go online and they trick the predator to show up, the pedophile, and they bust them in the parking lot or wherever they're going to meet the child. And the video I watched specifically was one of a mother showing up with toddlers to her toddlers to pick up an 11-year-old girl to take back to her house to molest with her husband. And watching that video was very informative. She started bringing up maps and she was completely justifying it. She was talking like this was normal, you know, and she equated it to, oh, you know, we've been seeing it on the news lately. We've been seeing it in the media. So this, we didn't even really know about this until the media put it out. And the news has been talking about this maps, you know, notion. And, you know, that's really what we believe in. And, you know, we were just going to pick up this girl. Her mom, you know, is never around. And she's not home on the weekends. And the guy was like, so you mean her mom works? Like, it was ridiculous. And she's like, no, yeah, we were going to take her. And we told her, you know, she has a separate room in our house. We have a bathroom for her in our house. You know, we take showers all together, you know, with the toddlers and stuff. And we let her know that she can either shower with us like a family, or she can have her own bathroom. I mean, the point here is that she was trying to justify it and make it okay because it was like family. And then the husband shows up and says, yeah, I would rather her, you know, mess around, or my children mess around with someone in our family than a stranger. And when I look back at clues and different, or not clues, facts about, you know, Adam and my parents and this James guy, you know, my dad did, you know, and I can be wrong, and I hate to even have to talk about it, but we have to look at this. My dad met this James Campbell actually first, and he met him at the pool at the Diplomat Hotel when he was working as a cabana boy. And James Campbell was the best friend of my father's boss, John Monahan's son. So he was like, to my dad, it was like the boss's kid's friend, you know, that would be at the hotel running around the pool and stuff. So when my dad first met James Campbell, he was only 12 or 13 years old. Now, my mom was 16 when my dad met her, and he was 22. And then they're down in Florida now, they're older, and my dad's meeting James Campbell when he's 12 or 13. Then there's, you know, writings in the documents about how, you know, he became like part of the family at 19 years old. My parents named him the godfather of Adam. And then they talk about, you know, how he then moved into the house with them. And he was like a houseboy. And that's what they were saying. I'm sorry, I digress. In this YouTube video with these maps or whatever, people picking up this girl who they thought, they were saying, oh, it's more like, you know, when she's younger, it's about having someone in the house to help with the children. It's like having another family member. And, you know, they were trying to justify it like that, right? Like having a house person. Then when she got older, around 16, 17, 18, if she wanted to, you know, sleep with the husband or marry the husband, then that would be appropriate. But obviously not when she's 11, 12, whatever. She would just be living with them and hanging out with them, is what this woman on the YouTube video said. So it really did make me think about that, and the fact that, you know, James then moves into my parents' house. He quotes himself how, you know, and it was known how Adam would say, I have two daddies, one that goes to work and one that stays home. You know, James moved out just about 2 weeks prior to Adam going missing, stating that, you know, my dad and he had an argument. My dad asked him to leave, and that he was going to get on his own and get his life together in hopes that my mom would join him and leave my father. So there was a lot more going on there, you know, and then James is like 25 years old when Adam goes missing, and he's doing all the housework. He's taking care of Adam. He's, you know, taking him to school, putting him to bed. You know, where's my mom during this? And, you know, so there's all that. I'm talking, there's not really like a definitive thing that I'm here saying right now. I'm just kind of talking it out since you brought it up, but it's very interesting to observe, you know, in terms of the Adam issue and story, to be observing and finding out more facts about what was really going on. And then that's again what brought me back to the allegations against me. You know, it was like, Oh, she has paramour. They kept in it saying there were paramour. She allows to sleep in the bed with her children. And I'm like, I've never had anybody like barely even meet my children, never mind sleeping in bed. Like none of it made sense. But then when we look back, it's like noted how Adam would go sleep with my mom's paramour when he would get scared in their home, you know? So I'll be, again, lining up more of that later, but just for an example.
No, I appreciate you answering all my questions. What stood out to me the most just now is, I don't know if I didn't catch it before, the runway part was like, whoa, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I'm going to hand it back to Mike. Go ahead, Megan.
No, the runway part, it is a thing, and people can go, I mean, it's sick is what I mean by that. People can go look that up. I think it was 60 Minutes or, you know, 60 Minutes Australia, one of those great, or one of those that actually do cover that kind of stuff. They did put up it was a special that they did on fostering, and I was crying by the end of the segment, to be honest, and I'm pretty tough in it, but the story that they used about the little boy and then the weird pedophile that adopted him and then returned him months later and just what the boy went through. You know, I'll end on my diatribes of CPS with that. No one is thinking about the perspective of the children in this. No one. We're all sitting here with our ideas, our gripes, our priorities, what we deem is right or wrong or true or false. And we're completely ignoring the real victims who can't speak for themselves. And it's the children.
Well, yeah, thank you, know, you again, that's... Megan. Oh, I'm sorry. Here you go, Mike, and we appreciate you coming on tonight.
Oh, I appreciate you guys. Love you, Kelly.
Back at you.
I had a quick question.
Go ahead.
Yep. Okay, so Megan, appreciate you coming on and everything. My girlfriend, she's a therapist, so she works with children and adults. But some of these nights, you know, she gets done at 6 o'clock with group, then she has to notate all these notes and everything into it. And then I'll call her, you know, hey, hon, when do I need to start the pizza for the oven and everything? Are you going to be home soon? No, I got to keep going because we have to deal with CPS now.
Mm-hmm.
So then I'm like, well, is it really that required? Like, how screwed up is the situation? Because hearing your story and everything and hearing a lot of these stories, you're just like, CPS. But then, like you just brought up too, like there's parents that just do meth. Like there are just legitimate bad parents out there.
Yeah.
So, is there a good side to CPS with this stuff as well? Like,
you know
what I mean? Like,
yeah. Sorry. Did you have more to that?
Nah.
Okay.
Well, I had that.
Sorry. Go ahead. We might
go. I'll let you go on and then I'll finish up.
Okay. No, I mean, there's good people, right? This is a systemic issue. So thank you for bringing that up, actually, because, you know, that's another thing with that. There are real abuse situations and there are good people in the system, right? It is more of a grooming that happens within the system, if you will. It's, you know, good. The public is told that there's all these children that, you know, need loving homes. There's good people like your girlfriend that go into these, you know, to help children heal and families, you know, there is definitely that. But where we see a breakdown is once they get in the system as a social worker handling case plans. Now, therapists, you know, can be a little more removed. It depends on, you know, that's a different thing. But within the system, you will have, for example, you will have good social workers come in. And then what happens is it's like a gossip, bully system that starts to happen. If they start speaking up or they start seeing things that they don't like, then they're threatened, then they are called crazy, they're bullied within the department, and then they're usually fired or they quit. Case managers are, I won't even go into the medications and the alcoholism and everything, that the obesity, all of it, that, you know, social workers you know, and find themselves involved in after being in the system. And once they speak up, you know, they are retaliated against. That's why we've asked good people within the system, like social workers or guardian ad litems or transporters or even judges, you know, and district attorneys to come forward, or prosecuting attorneys, excuse me, in dependency, to come forward and say, you know, we're pissed now, you know, even law enforcement, come forward, say, you know, we're pissed. We are good people. We took an oath to protect children and families. We got involved in this to see people do better, you know, and all of that. And that is not happening right now. And until it does, we're going to speak up about this, or we're not going to participate, you know. There just has to be other ways that we need people within that to come forward and say, you know, we did see this. We're not saying that it's every single case. And you also have to remember that a system couldn't keep going if they don't show some success stories. But also within that, what we're seeing is that children are being returned to abusers, to people on drugs, and being adopted out and away from good families that have shown up, because they also know the protective parent is going, a good parent is going to keep fighting for their child, right? So that's going to keep the money coming. That's going to keep the system going. So, you know, we just have to navigate. Again, it's not black and white. It's not easy. I guarantee your girlfriend is an amazing person, but yeah. And notice how she says after all of her work, they then have to deal with the CPS stuff. You know, workers are being worked to the bone. Workers have to go in offices right now and stay with teenagers, you know, 24/7, or when, you know, the teenager's unruly and different things like that. But we know that these things are happening. It's like I brought up earlier in terms of where are the child psychologists on a fundamental level in the system? Not when you get higher up or an administrator that approves an evaluation or something. We're talking about the hands-on people that, you know, if we want to have this system handle our issues, then we need to have people that are actually qualified. I mean, that's not rocket science, you know, to be involved in that. And at this point, the bottom line, the hands-on people are not trained. And the administrators are able to bully and get their way. And as long as they get those quotas, that's what they care about, sadly, in an overall picture. We've had wonderful people come forward in my case and in all the cases we've been working in one way or another, and they are retaliated against, they are threatened, and they do lose their jobs. So that is a reality.
Awesome. So question number two for you. I dropped on the wall a couple of nights ago. I saw a commercial for John Walsh and Omega XL. Does that make you think that he's running low on funds and this fight's going to be over for you soon?
Well, I know that he was running low on funds in the beginning of COVID, and that's also part of why he did this to me. I believe, without getting into detail, I know names and different things, but I have a good reason to believe that he actually reallocated assets or different things into potentially my name, knowing that he was going to do this. I know in the beginning they were attempting to get a conservatorship as well. It's a very Britney Spears, you know, take the kids, say she's crazy, get her under control, get the conservatorship, which would allow them to then access anything that they had put in my name, any of their assets or anything that they put in my name prior, right? So in the beginning of COVID, I know that they were very low on money. I know last year they, you know, by owner and private sold their Finger Lakes Skinny Atlas home, the mansion up there. So I've been seeing things like that, as well as the fact that when they adopted my two sons, then they, you know, get supplement money for that. I know a lot of elite parents that have done this to their children so that they can have retirement supplements. So, yeah, there's fishy stuff going on behind that. And I think that the Omega thing is very ironic, because in my case, they, you know, alleged against me because I was choosing natural treatments for my cancer, first before any, you know, major options to treat it. You know, that was heavily criticized and all of that, but here's my father promoting the Omegas that I'm like telling him to, I mean, that's what I did before all this. I taught people about toxin-free living and integrative health, functional nutrition, you know, all of that is what I specialized in, and especially healing from trauma and how to do that. And then here's my dad on the Omegas commercial. So the hypocrisy and the irony in my situation, you know, I guess does make it so I can have, I guess, a weird chuckle in this. But yeah, I saw it too.
It is kind of funny like that, especially with you bringing up that point there too, because the FDA doesn't regulate any dietary supplements, and I'm pretty sure this would fall under that category as well too. So
yeah,
you know, when this all comes down for you and everything, you're gonna slam them.
Thanks. I want everyone to do what's right. I hate being in this position. I loved my parents. My dad was my savior, you know, when, you know, Jesus should have been. I get it. I admit it in front of everyone. And I'm actually blessed and grateful to have realized that, you know, at any point in life. But, you know, my dad was my savior. I believed everything. And, you know, just to grow up and really realize narrative versus truth and what grooming is, or what these, you know, media puppets really are, or what, you know, when I started seeing him literally during COVID, like watching CNN on this huge screen TV in his house, and he'd like be watching it with his eyes really big and then look over at me and like literally repeat the script at me. And it was against anything he's ever, like, my dad was always into natural stuff. He was always into, you know, it would be like against anything he'd ever taught me my entire life, you know? So it's really bizarre to watch that stuff. And I know people have experienced that in different ways throughout this in their own families or communities as well. So it's a wild thing. But then when you find his AARP article about the deep brain stimulation procedure that he's had through Mayo Clinic, which the side effects can be, you know, personality change and aggression and all of this, you know, it makes you think. And then also when you know that there's more people behind him than just him, you know, you brought up the money thing and, you know, would this be towards the end of it? But, you know, he's got the National Center behind him that doesn't want the information out. He's got three-letter agencies. I mean, he admitted to me that 8 FBI agents, he tried to threaten me and say, Megan, you're in big trouble. 8 FBI agents have contacted me about you. And, then I started thinking about it. I was like, no, they're not contacting you about Megan Walsh. They're contacting you about you, sadly. So I just want this to be over. I want us to be able to be moving into, you know, better ways. As I always say, the Better Ways campaign. There's better ways to be handling hardships for our children and families. You know, we should have a loving energy around this. This should be, you know, very supportive and protective, and, you know, it just really needs to shift. And I hope that, you know, me biting the bullet, I've had 4 babies naturally. And when you feel like you can't do it anymore, that's when you know the baby's coming, and then the pain goes away and you can move forward, you know, happy. And I just hope that maybe something like that can happen here in this situation for, you know, all these children and families going through it, that we can ultimately all of us get it together at some point and bite the bullet of how ugly this is and just start working together, you know, for better ways.
Awesome, Megan. I appreciate you coming on. Thank you. We all appreciate you. You really do.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys so much. I really could not, I know people say that, but I really could not do this without everybody. I mean, the fact that, you know, we have the truth, I know the truth of my situation. You know, I might not know the truth about my brother or different things, but, you know, when we can come together and support each other and navigate, you know, that's a lot of what it's about. So I'm very grateful for all of you.
And Megan, we do have another question for you. And if anyone else has a question, if you press the raise button, we can call on you in order. And Diane, your mic is unmuted.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks, Megan, for coming on. You will continue to be in my prayers. And I want you to know that I'm sincere when I say that.
Hi, Diane. Thank you, honey.
Hi, Megan.
Hi.
My question is I just want to get your perspective on whether you think this whole Sound of Freedom thing, and it was, I mean, it blew up and then it just kind of waned.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Caviezel was on everything. So was Tim Ballard. And then I saw a video where Tim Ballard were giving away tactics that they used to catch people. And I thought that very odd. Do you have any perspectives on any of that? Did it make a difference at any point when it first came out? Did you see it making a difference? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Diane. So, you know, it again, it's not black and white, and I hate to have to say that, but it's not. I do think that it made a big impact. I mean, who's not going to be happy that, you know, the issue of child trafficking was brought to the forefront for whatever period of time that it was? It got a lot of people out and really looking at the issue. But then again, you know, like you said, it was a very quick thing. It was blown up. It got, you know, chalked up to a QAnon thing, a lot of it because of what Caviezel and Ballard were saying and the way that they chose to put it out, unfortunately. And I would just like to, I try to rise above that. I try to describe things or talk about things in a way that we haven't been pegged as crazies or QAnon or easily dismissed, right? And I will say about the film that I think it's great to bring awareness. I think also, though, we know what international child trafficking looks like. I don't think that anyone doubts that child trafficking happens in Bangkok or in India or in, you know, other places in the world and in South American countries and all of that. So I think that, you know, we've all been, you know, adamant about that. We understand that. We don't shame that or deny that. But what, you know, Sound of Freedom, we have to also look at the aspect of the NGO involved in it, the funders, you know, Carlos Slim and what they're affiliated with. And we do have to look at things. We have to follow our own rules, right? Especially as patriots. We can't be saying and questioning other celebrities and other big figures that come out and then not question fully, you know, figures that are what, quote unquote, like on our side, for lack of a better term, or that we support or believe in, because we don't know. And it was a great thing for awareness and, you know, and people doing good work, but it also gatekept and really distracted from real victims and survivors here in America. It really, I have to humbly say that. And I don't, you know, I will be the guy that, you know, speaks the stuff that no one wants to. You can be mad at me or not, but it really gatekept and distracted from the real issue here in America, the domestic issue. Again, it was about international. It's about the border. We're not saying that those aren't real issues and that we need to address that, but it's stemming from, that's stemming from something that is a domestic issue here that's not being addressed. And Jim Caviezel, I've heard recordings of him talk about how he knows it's CPS, he knows all about CPS, but that did not get brought up at all. So if we want to keep denying, and actually the real case that Sound of Freedom was you know, based off of was actually a domestic case. It was not a border you know, trafficking case. It was of a man in his community that had a house with the pool, and, you know, he was the local friend of this grandmother who had the children, and they would be allowed to go over to his house a lot. And he had taken the boys several times over the border back and forth. And that one time that he got caught was not because Tim Ballard looked in the boys' eyes and all of this. It was because he was coming across the border with a child that he did not have a passport for. He didn't have identification for the child. So obviously they looked into it further. The little girl was not taken to Colombia and sex trafficked. She was with the grandmother the whole time. So, you know, that to me, I don't, you know, people say, oh, it was just based on, oh, that's, you know, all this. But he went around saying that this was a true story. He's adamant about it. And for me, that brings up the notion of that, you know, emotional manipulation or giving that my father is very good at. He's done for years. Or even with Adam's case, you know, if there's more to the story, no one's questioned it because they were given this horrific, you know, graphic, you know, emotional situation to cognitively deal with. So when we're looking at Sound of Freedom, yes, I think it was amazing for exposure of child trafficking for people that weren't aware. I'm disappointed in some of the aspects and the way that, you know, they went right into the pitfalls of, you know, people being able to say, oh, conspiracy theory or, you know, all of that. We need to be talking about CPS before we talk about any adrenochrome. We need to be talking about CPS before we talk about any, you know, border issue or anything. The border issue is being put, the children are being trafficked into our system. Is that making sense the way I'm describing it? Because they're being put into our system, our DHHS system, and our CPS system is what's taking these children around and allowing sponsors to pick them up. We just saw from Muckraker last week, an amazing video at the airport of children, you know, being transported with these workers, and the way that the workers talk to you, they ignore you, they are nasty and disgusting. I have video of my own children in an airport being taken around like that. So, you know, again, I want people to really focus on America first and our children, not watch it all happen around the whole world and think that it's not going to come here and that it isn't already because we say, you know, there's kids that need loving homes. You know, that's a grift. So Sound of Freedom brought up a lot of things. It exposed stuff, but it also exposed, you know, how NGOs work and how they, you know, put these narratives out and these chest grabbing things. And they say they're doing this work and they collect these funds and they have these funders behind them. And, you know, I hope people can also look at that with an, you know, an objective point of view, not it's, oh, Tim Ballard or someone's bashing him or, you know, anything like that. So it's also interesting that he wanted to hide the fact that they used psychics for some of the jumps. And it's very interesting because they also like to kind of pass over that within Adam's case, my brother's case. They used psychics as well. And apparently my father was going to a romance psychic prior to Adam disappearing. And then they later used her to try to find him. So the whole psychic notion is also interesting while we're on the topic. Side note, but while we're on the topic of Sound of Freedom, which that would be CIA stuff.
Thank you, Megan, and God bless you and keep you, baby.
Thank you, Diane. Thank you so much. I love seeing you on here and on Twitter. God bless you.
If anybody else has a question, if you press the middle button, we can call up on you. Your mic is on mute, TG, sorry.
Hi, Megan. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing all this information with us. My daughter is a school counselor, and I may have came in late. You may have already discussed this, but she has to work with DHS a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming they are just as bad as CPS. Am I correct?
Yes. Yeah. They just go by different letters depending on where you are.
Do they have an association with the CIA as well?
Well, CIA would be like a root source. So that would be, you know, stemming way back. I brought up CIA because Tim Ballard and a lot of these bigger cases or people, you know, have this behind them, this use of psychics and random things that they don't want out. But yeah, DHS, I mean, if your daughter's a school counselor, then she's a mandated reporter. I did touch on that a little bit probably before you came in, but you know, she's then put in a position where she's told, you know, by law, she has to report everything. But then once children, and they love that, you know, they hold them to it. But once they're in the system and they have cases, all of these people that are lying, the caseworkers or witnesses within the court to have children taken, they are also mandated reporters. I mean, it's mandated reporters when they're reporting the kids, but then it doesn't matter and they're not held to the law, you know, when they're perjuring themselves or when they're doing, you know, the nefarious side of things, right? Then it's not enforced, and all of a sudden, you know, being a mandated reporter doesn't matter. I don't know if she's run into that or not, but.
Well, I know she does everything she possibly can to not have to contact DHS because she says, I hate doing that. She's actually about to get out of school counseling because she sees.
Yeah, well, good. You know what? Good for her. And that's what, you know, people really need to do. And I know a lot of people are worried about, I invested, you know, my career in this, or this is my livelihood, or I have a family. But there are jobs that, you know, you can actually be helping children. You can even create things within your community. You know, if she's young and, you know, vibrant, I mean, why not start a new initiative in your community? I had been saying that from the beginning of COVID and before, that when children returned to the school, a lot of pressure was going to be on the counselors, especially as mandated reporters, because the system was going to start pressuring them with, say, new checklists or new ways to interview the children. Or I predicted, you know, watch, they're going to say, oh, we're just going to have everyone come in since COVID and do a check-in. And, you know, they'll start asking, oh, did mommy or daddy yell at you a little more during COVID? And, you know, I was really concerned about that. And we've just progressively seen that occur horrifically as, you know, children went back to school and as the system is getting greedier. So we need good people like her, you know, to really come forward and make those changes. If she's not able to do that within her system, then she does need to, you know, come forward, like, you know, to authorities or something, but, you know, just in her own life, make those decisions that, you know, I don't want to be a part of this. This is not what I went into this for. And I know that I can be of service. I am a good person. I can be of service, and I'm going to find a way to do that. And, you know, I know that in the future, we're going to see great community efforts and different things because of the amount of people and families that have and parents that have been affected by this. But even more so, the children that are growing up and coming out of this system. I mean, we now have a status in our country where children are raised by a system, a lot of them, and it's growing by the day. And a lot of them are aging out and coming forward and speaking up. And they are so eloquent and so on point, and it's really incredible. And half of it breaks my heart. You know, I'm encouraged to see that, but half of it breaks my heart that us adults and the parents can't get it together, and that it has to be the children in a lot of these scenarios to be the ones to speak up. My daughter, before they took her, she looked at me with her little fist next to her side and water in her eyes, and she said, "Mom, you need to speak up." Just like that. And I have to, you know, I have to fight getting choked up about that. But I will say that, you know, ever since she said that to me, y'all, I have not stopped speaking up, and I won't. So I hope more of us can get it together to do that. And people like your daughter and people that did get involved in this to do great work and are trying their hardest. You know, it's just time for us to be a little more vocal with grace and truth, you know, so we can get to justice and peace for our children and families and have great communities.
I agree. I think we've all got to be vocal on anything we see. We need to report it. You know, we've got to watch out for these children.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it's become. You know, I want to clarify that, you know, when you say, because there is a saying, like, if you see it, report it. And, you know, but I want to be diligent about that, because it doesn't mean reporting it to CPS. We're at a point now where we need to be the diligent community saying that if we see anything within these workers or within these courts in our communities, that we are going to report that, because we've been, you know, we've allowed the system to turn, you know, we're turning on each other, you know, in other words. I'm not saying that you shouldn't report if you see child abuse, but I hope I'm coming across right. It's like, you know, we need to be reporting these people that are doing this to families and children. We need to be standing to, you know, supporting families that are being lied on in court. And we need to care about that. You know, we need to care about these judges that are not paying attention or just having their bias and ruling on that. Or even, politics has come into this. My case is so political. You know, my children were basically taken off based on, you know, the demonizing and exaggeration of fundamental traditional lifestyle and, you know, my beliefs or my political stances. So anyways, that's just some things to add to that, but
well, it's thank time. You. Thank yeah, you. Thank God, you. People. God bless you for all that you're doing.
Oh, thank you. God bless you and your daughter. Thank you, TG.
Thank you, ma'am.
All right. If no one else has questions, I won't keep Megan any longer. It's been a little bit over 2 hours, and it's always a pleasure to have you on with us, Megan.
Always, Mike. I'm always here, and everyone can contact me. They can find me on Twitter, MeganWalsh_. If you want to DM me there, or you can't, just leave a comment, and I'll DM you directly. Or I'm on here as well. I just started a little channel on here exposing the spotlight. That, you know, if you're patient with me, I will be adding more to, as well as doing a pre-order of an upcoming book that I'll be releasing. But I'm just going to be doing small things here and there. As you know, my priority is the daily fight and using our voice and getting people to really do what they can in their communities. And I really want to keep the focus on that. We've got a lot of podcasters and a lot of people doing great work to spread the awareness, but it's time for us all to be, you know, doing what we can in our communities.
Absolutely. Thank you, Megan. Hopefully you have a good rest of your day. Thank you for all the information you shared. And whenever you're ready to talk more about Adam, and if you want to bring anything else to the attention of the people, you got my number.
Yeah, I do. Thank you so much, Mike. And I just want to thank everyone that took the time to listen tonight, and really encourage everyone to get involved and just do the small things. It's really small for the impact that it'll make, especially for our children, and they are our future. So I just want to thank everyone so much and just say, God bless y'all, America first, and we'll talk to everybody soon.
Yes, ma'am. God bless you too, and God bless America.
God bless America. Amen.
Thank you, Megan.